This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Benjamin Netanyahu says that the Gaza war has exacted a very heavy price on the regime amid the rising number of Israeli fatalities in Gaza. Israel intensified its aerial and artillery strikes on the besieged Gaza Strip, raising the overall Palestinian death toll to 20,400, mostly women and children. Protesters in several U.S. cities call for the expansion of the boycott and sanctions movement against Israel. They demand an end to Washington's support for Tel Aviv. I'm Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Our top story is really Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says that the war on Gaza has exacted a very heavy price on the regime. Netanyahu says that Israel has no choice but to keep fighting to achieve its goals, including elimination of Hamas and the return of the captives. He made those comments after the Israeli army confirmed that 14 troops were killed in Gaza since Friday. It said 153 Israeli troops have been killed and nearly 500 others wounded since the beginning of the Israeli ground invasion in Gaza. Hamas says that the number of Israeli army casualties is much higher than that. Okay, now let's bring in Kevin Barrett, editor of the Veterans Today. Good to have you with us, Kevin. So Netanyahu is there saying this is a heavy price. How heavy the price? That's the question.
Well, Netanyahu is not admitting how heavy the price really is. The actual number of Israeli casualties is much higher than the official count, and we know that because we've actually seen that the resistance fighters have filmed their taking out tanks and trucks and other military vehicles by the hundreds. And also they've filmed many of their other operations as well. And so we can see that just based on what's out there in the resistance film footage, the casualty count has to be a lot higher than Netanyahu is admitting. But he also is ignoring the fact, at least publicly, that Israel has lost something like 7% of its population. They haven't been killed. They fled the country. This has happened occasionally before, but this time it's not certain that they'll be coming back because the Israeli economy is in shambles. The northern edge of the country is now uninhabited as they've had to all been evacuated due to the northern front of Hezbollah. And the Israeli economy may not come back. It's heavily dependent on tourism, and that's completely shut down now. The usual tourist hotels are full of Israelis who fled the war zones in the north. And so that, of course, is bad enough. But then the future of the Zionist entity looks incredibly bleak because of the way that they've managed to commit the most horrendous genocide ever seen on live television. And they've sickened and appalled pretty much the entire world. Their only supporters now are in Washington, D.C. And even in the United States of America, polls show that the majority of young adults want the resistance to win and put an end to Israel. So they have lost the military battle. They can't get their hostages back, and they can't succeed in their on-the-ground operations, and they can't stop Hamas as they say they're going to. They've lost in their economic battle. They've lost in their propaganda war, where they've been making up ludicrous stories about beheaded babies that nobody believes. Nobody believes anything they say anymore. So they've blown all their credibility, blown up their economy, and shown that they're a military paper tiger the end of the Zionist entity is near, and Netanyahu knows that his own political end is even nearer.
Okay, thank you so much. Kevin Barrett in Saudi, Morocco. Now, moving on, the U.S.-Israeli genocidal campaign in the Gaza Strip is in its third month, with the unending bloodshed claiming more and more Palestinian lives. According to Gaza officials, at least 166 people have been killed in the past day. The latest attacks targeted the southern city of Khan Yunis and the northern city of Jabalia. The genocidal war in Gaza is in its 79th day, death toll standing more than 20,400. Some 54,000 people have also been injured. The majority of victims are women and children. Those who have survived the war are living in dire conditions. The World Health Organization has renewed warnings that famine is looming in the Palestinian territory. Israel's indiscriminate bombing of the Gaza Strip has left nowhere safe for residents. Palestinians say that civilians are killed in the so-called safe areas while thinking that they are out of harm's way.
This morning, the occupation planes targeted children and women while they were sleeping in their homes, and about 10 people were martyred. We pulled out 7 while the rest of the children remained trapped in an unknown place under the rubble. We are lifting the rubble to retrieve the rest of the children, the martyrs. This is a residential square where that building was partially destroyed and 3 houses were completely demolished. They were collapsed above the heads of children who were safe in their homes.
We were told to head to Rafah. It was a safe area. Where is the safety? Look. Look at the people. In every house, there's at least 1 wounded, 1 dead. Where's the security in Rafah? We claim our rights. This is our land and we won't leave. Even if the houses collapse on our heads, we won't leave.
It was around 9:30 when we were surprised by the strike on this house, which is located in an area considered safe and listed as safe for its inhabitants. To the east, there are several schools, perhaps a cluster of schools, perhaps 6 or 7 schools, each housing more than 4,000 or 5,000 displaced people. On the whole, this area is classified as safe. In short, this is the Israeli security they claim to boast about, bombing civilians and houses in which people are still living.
The health facilities in the Gaza Strip striving to cope with the overwhelming tallies of Palestinian injuries as Israel's unabated strikes go on. Our Gaza correspondent has a report.
The indiscriminate shelling that has been pounding all areas of Gaza Strip has resulted in paralysis of the health sector in the coastal territory. The already collapsed health sector in Gaza has forced the wounded people to undergo operations in their injured limbs without anesthesia. In the meantime, the suffering of people with dialysis has aggravated incrementally as the instruments and medical appliances became completely overwhelmed with the doubled number of patients.
The situation is so dire and difficult. We lack all basic medical needs over the continuous Israeli airstrikes. We receive thousands of the injured people with difficult injuries and burns. Even the patients of the chronic diseases are suffering. We don't have enough medical staff. We don't have enough beds. Many injured people were treated on the floor without anesthesia. Many injured people had their limbs amputated over the lack of medical necessities.
Another aspect of this prolonged onslaught is unfolding with the intake of contaminated water and malnutrition. Children are suffering from a wide scale of intestinal diseases as a result of having no access to the basic humanitarian necessities.
Gaza's health sector was suffering even before the aggression due to the suffocating siege. However, with this unprecedented aggression, the suffering exacerbated, particularly the need to medicine and cure of the sick people. There is a severe shortage of the needed medical supplies and needs, particularly those needed for the dialysis department. On the other hand, we received many cases of children diagnosed with intestinal diseases because of the contaminated water and malnutrition.
For the people here, it takes standing in long lines in front of the pharmacy, waiting to get the medicine needed for any illness. Often it's unavailable because of the overuse of all kinds of medicine.
My child is 1 year old. He's sick. He was infected with stomach flu, and he has chronic convulsions. He was lying in the Nasser hospital in Gaza when the Israeli forces attacked it. I attempted to bring the medicine with me when I came to the middle area, but the Israeli soldiers on the checkpoint ordered me to drop it. For days, I've been trying to get the medicine, but I couldn't. Every time they tell me it's unavailable, I don't know what to do.
As we have just seen, these are some details of the continuous and extended disaster that the Palestinian people are living and experiencing these moments in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital as a place taken shelter by the Palestinian people. It's clear that the people here are trapped between the rock of the continuous airstrikes and the hard place of the deteriorating humanitarian conditions in Gaza Strip. Ja'abu Musabbih, the middle area of Gaza Strip.
Now, Christians in the Palestinian city of Bethlehem have canceled their Christmas celebrations over the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. They gathered in one of the city's major squares to raise the Palestinian flag. We were joined earlier by Mazen Gomsia, a Palestinian scientist and author from Bethlehem, for his take on that issue.
This year, unfortunately, there will not be celebration, so to speak. There will be the usual religious ceremonies. We still commemorate and consider this an important season for Jesus had been born, but we will not have celebrations. There's no Christmas tree in the Nativity Square. There's no lights or decorations. There's only mourning for the death. For the martyred people of Gaza, 23,000 so far, and the numbers keep going up. A genocide that's sponsored by the United States. And so we also speak to the international community to tell them to stop this genocide. This is a season of hope. We are still hopeful. I think the Zionist movement is losing, and their genocide of the civilians is compensating for its losses, for its attempt to bury the Palestinian cause over 75 years, have come to a dead end, basically. And so we are still hopeful. We still pray for peace. We still hope that there will be an end of this genocide, that the massacres that are being committed, the starvation, lack of water, lack of medicine, the spreading of diseases that are now affecting 500,000 people in Gaza.
The Israeli military has released the names of 8 soldiers killed in fresh fighting with Palestinian resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip. They were killed in southern or central Gaza on Saturday. Tel Aviv saying that 158 troops have been killed since the beginning of the ground invasion of Gaza in October. Hamas's movement, however, says that the actual number is much higher and reports daily heavy blows to the regime's military. Israel had set out several objectives in launching its onslaught in Gaza, including the dismantling of Hamas militarily and releasing the captives in Gaza, but none of those goals have been achieved. Now, thousands of Israelis have once again held rallies against Prime Minister Netanyahu for his failure to secure the release of captives in Gaza.
We need to make sure that Benjamin Netanyahu will go away. He makes more harm than good, and he betrayed the people. He absolutely a traitor. So we want him to go. We've been protesting for a year now, and it's just getting worse. So it needs to be now.
Now, the protesters are angry at Netanyahu's handling of the case. They say that they want to exert more pressure on the cabinet to bring the captives back. The new rallies came days after the Israeli military mistakenly killed 3 captives in Gaza. Several had already been killed in the regime's airstrikes on Gaza. Hamas said on Saturday that 5 more captives might have been killed in the attacks. According to Israeli officials, 129 people are still being held by Hamas. Last month, more than 100 captives were released during a brief truce. Protest rallies against Israel genocide in Gaza have continued around the world during the Christmas holiday weekend. Now, protesters in New York City said there should be no business and Christmas as usual while the genocide is continuing in the Palestinian land. They call on people to join the boycott and sanctions movement to demand an end to U.S. support for Tel Aviv. That was one of several demonstrations across the U.S. and one of the busiest shopping days of the year. Protesters also filled the streets of Milan and Rome in Italy, expressing solidarity with Palestinians. Now, in London, demonstrations continued for an 11th week, with protesters saying that they would not vote for pro-Israel candidates in the general elections. People also gathered in Berlin to condemn the German coalition government's support for Israel. Now, last but not least, protesters in Islamabad called for international action to stop the genocide in Gaza, saying otherwise everyone will be responsible for the bloodshed. The Iranian Navy has received a major boost with the delivery of a wide range of domestically manufactured military equipment. The additions include strategic cruise missile systems with a range of more than 1,000 kilometers, helicopters equipped with electronic warfare systems, smart loitering and kamikaze drones, diver detection systems, and tugboats are among the other new arrivals. Iran's military capabilities have grown considerably in recent years, with the officials repeatedly stressing that a prowess is meant for defensive and deterrent purposes. The UN says that Ansar Allah movement and the Saudi-backed fugitive government of Yemen have agreed to a new ceasefire as part of a peace initiative to end the 9-year war in the country. The UN Special Envoy for Yemen said that the agreement came after a meeting between representatives of the warring parties in Saudi Arabia. Hans Grundberg welcomed the development and said that sets the stage for an inclusive political process to end the war. The UN brokered ceasefire first took effect in April 2022. The deal that expired in October has significantly reduced hostilities in Yemen. The country was invaded by a Saudi-led coalition in March 2015. The war killed hundreds of thousands of people and pushed Yemen into one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. And with that, we come to the end of this newscast.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Britain, almost 8,000 people were harmed and 112 died last year as a direct result of enduring long waits for an ambulance to arrive or for surgery, prompting warnings that Britain's National Health Service care delays are a disaster. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. According to a major new study, thousands of Britons could be dying unnecessarily as the United Kingdom lags behind other major countries on patient safety. According to research from the Institute of Global Health Innovation, at Imperial College, University of London, the United Kingdom was ranked 21 out of 38 countries on four key patient safety indicators, with countries such as Australia, New Zealand, and Norway rated among the highest. The report found that if the United Kingdom improved enough to rank among the top 10 countries, there would be 15,733 fewer people dying from what is described as treatable mortality, deaths which could be avoided through timely healthcare interventions. There would also be 776 fewer deaths from neonatal disorders and 870 fewer deaths from avoidable medical errors. According to the authors of the report, it is the first major international study of safety data that looked at 89 separate safety measures, such as waiting times, stillbirth rates, cases of sepsis, and the frequency of surgical items being left inside the patients after a surgical operation. Former Health Minister Lord Aradazi, co-director of the Institute and a renowned surgeon, said the report, which has been backed by the World Health Organization, the WHO, was a wake-up call for Britain and other nations to improve their safety for patients. Health Minister Lord Aradazi said, "You can't improve things if you don't measure them, and this is our attempt to engage clinicians in all countries, not just in the United Kingdom, to have better measurements and drive performance improvements." Researchers looked at different safety measures across four key areas: maternal mortality, treatable mortality, adverse effects of medical treatment, and neonatal disorders. Researchers calculated the number of deaths per 100,000 people for a range of patients, including those who died from medical errors and treatable cases such as heart disease, women who died during childbirth, and neonatal deaths from conditions such as sepsis or oxygen deprivation. James Titcombe, the chief executive of Research Unit at Patient Safety Watch, told the Independent newspaper, "Analysis of the data shows that thousands of lives could be saved if the National Health Service was as safe as the top-performing countries. That the National Health Service ranks only 21 out of 38 countries for patient safety is very concerning." James Titcombe added, "I hope this work and the publicly available dashboard can act as a catalyst in supporting further efforts to accelerate the rate of patient safety progress, both in the United Kingdom and internationally." British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. Almost 8,000 people were harmed and 112 died last year as a direct result of enduring long waits for an ambulance to arrive or for medical surgery, prompting warnings that the National Health Service care delays are a disaster. The fatalities included a man who died of a cardiac arrest after waiting 18 minutes for his 999 call to be answered by the ambulance service, and was dead by the time the ambulance crew arrived at the hospital. The figures are the first time NHS England has disclosed how often doctors and nurses file a patient safety report after someone suffers harm after waiting for help. They show that patient deaths arising directly from care delays have risen more than fivefold over the last 3 years, from 21 in 2019 to 112 cases last year, as the National Health Service has come under huge strain. The number of people who came to severe harm has also jumped from 96 to 152 during that same period. The overall number of people suffering some degree of harm in such circumstances has leapt from 3,979 cases in 2019 to 7,856 cases in 2022, representing a rise of 97%. Rachel Power, the chief executive of Patients Association, said, "These data are alarming and show quite clearly the human impact of the crisis in the National Health Service is having on individual patients. We have been watching the disaster unfolding across the National Health Service and have repeatedly warned about the threat to patient safety because of it. Trusts are reducing the amount of planned surgery they perform after the government's refusal to provide a £1 billion bailout to help cover the cost of staff strikes within the NHS. Rachel Power said this would translate into even more patients waiting for care and potentially coming to harm. A total of 471 patients waiting for adult mental health care suffered harm as a result of delays last year, more than in any other specialism. Though this may be down to higher patient numbers. The next highest numbers were in the care involving childbirth, with 253 cases, eye problems, 221 cases, and trauma and general surgery, 207 cases. NHS England gave The Guardian anonymous details of 30 of last year's deaths. One entry explained, long delay in call answer on critical call, original call into an unnamed ambulance service 18 minutes prior to first related call answered. Call coded as cardiac arrest, once answered and patient deceased on scene. The English website of Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story. Thousands of junior doctors in Wales will go on a three-day strike in January due to an unresolved pay dispute with the government amid crippling staffing shortages and worsening patient care. In August, the Welsh Junior Doctors Committee decided to ballot its members after being offered a below-inflation pay offer of 5%. Of the doctors eligible to vote in Wales, 65% responded, and 98% of those supported a strike. The 72-hour full walkout, which will take place on 15th of January, could see more than 3,000 doctors withdraw their labour from hospitals and GP surgeries across Wales. The Welsh Government called the decision disappointing and said it could not meet pay demands without more British Government money. In a joint statement, Dr. Oba Babs Osibodu and Dr. Peter Fahey, co-chairs of the British Medical Association, Wales Junior Doctors Committee, said the ballot results showed the strength of feeling. They said, "We're frustrated in despair and angry. We can't and won't take any further erosion of our pay." They added, "Our members have been forced to take this difficult decision because junior doctors in Wales have experienced a pay cut of 29.6% in real terms over the last 15 years. They said the decision to strike had not been made lightly and that members were not looking for a pay rise but asking for pay to be restored in line with inflation. They added, "Pay needs to be fair and competitive with other healthcare systems across the world to retain and recruit doctors and NHS staff to provide much-needed care. On top of this, junior doctors are experiencing worsening conditions, and so doctors are now looking to leave Wales to develop their careers for better pay and a better quality of life elsewhere." Junior doctors in other parts of England are scheduled to go on strike in the coming days, following unsuccessful negotiations that lasted for 5 weeks. Strikes by nurses, ambulance workers and junior doctors, which began with the first walkout in December of last year, have led to the cancellation of more than 900,000 operations and procedures by NHS England.
Ocean of Dua.
أسألك الهدى والتقى والعفاف والغنى.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear listeners, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Rarsi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of The Ocean of Dua. In this version of the program, inshallah, we will discuss the true meaning of prayer and dua, the value of prayer, ways of reaching the Almighty Allah, acceptance, and also benefits of dua. So stay with us. So, dear listeners, in the previous programs, we have counted a few number of the things we shouldn't ask from the Almighty Allah while we are trying to supplicate. We shouldn't ask against the rules and norms of this universe. We shouldn't also ask for the things which are unlawful. And neither should we ask for the eradication of others' blessings. And we should also be mindful about our own advantage, since sometimes out of our ignorance, we are praying against our own advantage and our own maslaha, and it is in fact harmful to us, but we don't know it yet. So the Almighty Allah, out of His affection, sometimes He delays the response, or He might actually avert a calamity from us instead of responding to that very dua or supplication. Sometimes we may ask for evil in the same manner as if we are asking for good. And not only that, but we also make haste to acquire it, to reach that very thing. The Holy Quran says, man prays for evil as avidly as he prays for good, and man is over hasty.
Alhamdulillahi khaliq al-khalq, basit al-rizq. فالق الأصباح ذي الجلال والإكرام والفضل والإنعام الذي بعد فلا يرى وقرب فشهد النجوى.
And among the things that Prophet Salih ala Nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhim as-salam told the people of Thamud was this part of the verse of the Holy Quran. He said, O my people, why do you press for evil sooner than for good? And in this regard, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has said, and you must know the ways to your salvation, so that you may not ask for Allah for that in which lies your destruction, thinking that your salvation is in it. Allah, the Almighty, the Majestic says, man prays for evil as avidly as he prays for good, and man is over hasty. So we shouldn't be hasty in the matter of responding our supplications, since there are numerous and various reasons if we think that apparently our supplication is not responded to. And this actually relates to another thing that we shouldn't ask from the Almighty Allah. Sometimes the Almighty Allah has put for us some tests, some trials, as the Holy Quran says, some fitna. These tests are given by the Almighty Allah for the human beings to prove for themselves how they are capable of doing the Almighty Allah's orders and how obedient they are in these trials. So seeking refuge from these tests and trials are from among the things we shouldn't ask from the Almighty Allah. In actual fact, it is not correct to seek refuge from the trial. The spouse of a person, his children, and his wealth are all kinds of tests. So it would not be right to seek Allah's protection from one's family and wealth. However, one can actually seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted, from deceptive and misleading tests. But seeking refuge from the tests completely is not right.
I remember when I Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo kashti ab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju tishnagi avar bedas. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad ab az. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you.
It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable. Knowing that this is our reward. The ocean of dua.
Imam Ali alayhi salam is narrated to have said, "None of you should say, 'O Allah, I seek your protection from the test.' For there is no one except that he is surrounded by tests. So whoever seeks refuge, he should seek it from the misleading tests. For Allah the Exalted says, 'Know that your possessions and your children are only a test.'" إِنَّمَا أَمْوَالُكُمْ وَأَوْلَادُكُمْ فِتْنَةً. Also, Imam Abu al-Hasan al-Naghi alayhi salam narrates from his fathers, Amir al-Mu'minin Ali alayhi salam heard a man saying, "O Allah, I seek refuge with you from the tests." So he remarked, "I see you taking refuge from your wealth and your children." Allah the Exalted says, "Indeed your possessions and your children are a trial. And instead, you should say, 'O Allah, I seek your protection from the deceptive trials.'" So in fact, Imam alayhi salam is talking about those mudillat, mudillatul fitan, the kinds of tests that are somehow deceptive, and actually they are misleading us from the right path. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
World Health Organization has warned that lethal combination of hunger and disease will lead to more deaths in the Gaza Strip. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of World Health Organization wrote, "Hunger is ravaging Gaza, and this is expected to increase illness across the strip, most acutely among children, pregnant and breastfeeding women, and older people." In new estimates released recently, the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, IPC Global Partnership, which includes WHO, said Gaza is facing catastrophic levels of food insecurity, with the risk of famine increasing each day. An unprecedented 93% of the population in Gaza is facing crisis levels of hunger, with insufficient food and high levels of malnutrition. At least one in four households are facing catastrophic conditions, experiencing an extreme lack of food and starvation, and having resorted to selling off their possessions and other extreme measures to afford a simple meal. Starvation, destitution, and death are evident. On recent missions to North Gaza, WHO staff say that every single person they spoke to in Gaza is hungry. Wherever they went, including hospitals and emergency wards, people asked them for food. They said, "We move around Gaza delivering medical supplies and people rush to our trucks hoping it's food," calling it an indicator of the desperation. Gaza is already experiencing soaring rates of infectious diseases. Over 100,000 cases of diarrhea have been reported since mid-October. Half of these are among young children under the age of 5 years, case numbers that are 25 times what was reported before the conflict. Over 150,000 cases of upper respiratory infection and numerous cases of meningitis, skin rashes, scabies, lice, and chickenpox have been reported. Hepatitis is also suspected, as many people present with the telltale signs of jaundice. While a healthy body can more easily fight off these diseases, a wasted and weakened body will struggle. Hunger weakens the body's defenses and opens the door to disease. Malnutrition increases the risk of children dying from illnesses like diarrhea, pneumonia, and measles, especially in a setting where they lack access to life-saving health services. Even if the child survives, wasting can have lifelong impacts as it stunts growth and impairs cognitive development. Breastfeeding mothers are also at high risk of malnutrition. From 0 to 6 months of age, a mother's milk is the best and safest food a baby can get. This protects the child from nutritional deficiencies and catching deadly diseases such as diarrhea, especially when access to safe drinking water is extremely limited. Mental health issues on the rise across the population in Gaza, including among women, could further impact breastfeeding rates. Over 1.9 million people have been displaced from their homes, of whom over 1.4 million are staying in overcrowded shelters. These conditions are ripe for a continued rise in infectious diseases. In Gaza today, on average, there is only one shower for every 4,500 people, and one toilet for every 220. Clean water remains scarce, and there are rising levels of outdoor defecation. These conditions make the spread of infectious diseases inevitable. Tragically, access to health services across Gaza has plummeted as the war continues to degrade the health system. With the health system on its knees, those facing the deadly combination of hunger and disease are left with few options. The people of Gaza, who have already suffered enough, now face death from starvation and diseases that could be easily treated with a functioning health system. This must stop. Food and other aid must flow in far greater amounts. WHO reiterates its call for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. According to the Electronic Intifada, before the current war, and with Gaza blockaded since 2007, medications for chronic diseases and infections would start to run out in the last 10 days of each month. Patients needing those drugs would have to wait until the beginning of the following month. Then Gaza's health ministry would provide new supplies. That would often involve borrowing medicines from clinics run by the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, or buying medicines at high prices from private pharmacies. Now, there is almost no medicine in Gaza. The shelves are bare in governmental and UNRWA clinics and private pharmacies, if those pharmacies are still operating. More than 220,000 people with high blood pressure do not have medicine. Around 71,000 people with diabetes do not have insulin or anti-diabetics. Some 1,100 people who need kidney dialysis face major and potentially life-threatening complications because the healthcare system has been forced to collapse. In Gaza, more than 2,000 people are diagnosed with cancer per year. They include approximately 120 children. The two hospitals specializing in cancer have been attacked. Doa Yusuf, doctor, said, "Our center receives 600 patients per day. We are seeing a huge number of infections. Most of them are respiratory, skin, and gastrointestinal. Chickenpox, lice, and scabies, flu, gastroenteritis, and hepatitis A are extremely common. People in Gaza are living in inhuman conditions. Displaced people do not have adequate shelter or clothing in the harsh winter weather. About 700 people share each bathroom in UNRWA schools. That means adults and children have to queue for hours before they can use a bathroom with scarcely any water."
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very interesting question, which is very significant for us. The answer to which is pertinent in our daily life, and that is this: as you know, all of us live amongst other people. We're constantly meeting them. And, you know, once we meet a person, we greet them, you know. So the question we want to ask today is this: what are the etiquettes which have been stipulated in Islam for meeting another person, how should we greet another person? How should we meet them? Is there any etiquettes involved in this? Yes, there is. As you know, Islam is a very comprehensive religion. It has rules and it has stipulation and ordinances for everything. And from the most significant of things, such as how to use the bathroom, all the way up to the most difficult and thorny of issues, such as how one should run a government. And this issue that we want to talk about today is no exception to this. Islam has rules for this as well. In this connection, there are many hadiths and, many verses of the Holy Quran dealing with this. In one beautiful hadith narrated from the Holy Prophet, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "The young should greet the old." Now, in this hadith, the Prophet is kind of saying, is telling us, who should be the first to initiate the greeting. By greeting, we mean saying "Assalamu alaikum." As you know, Muslims, when they greet one another, they say "Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh." The Prophet said, when meeting, the young should initiate the greeting and say and greet the old. A single individual should greet two people. If there's one person and he meets two people, the one who is less, he should greet the more. The fewer number of people should greet the larger number of people. Now, this third one is probably an extension of the second. Then the Prophet said, the person on horseback should greet the one on foot. Now, people don't usually ride horses anymore, but let's say that somebody's driving a car and he passes by his friend who's walking on the sidewalk. He should be the one to initiate the greeting and say salam to his friend before the friend does. Then the Prophet said, the person walking should greet the one standing. If somebody's standing, let's say he's standing in a place and, talking to somebody, if this person comes and he's walking, he should be the one to say salam before the other person. And finally, the Prophet said, the person standing should greet the one sitting. If somebody's sitting and another person is standing, the person who's standing should say salam before the one who is sitting. In this beautiful hadith, not only is it an answer to our question, it also shows us all of the to what detail Islam, the detail to which Islam has paid attention to all of the intricate details of social life and has rules for everything. In another blessed tradition, the Prophet said, there are five things that I will never leave until death. And he mentioned a few things until he finally said, and greeting the young. Now, somebody might say that this contradicts the previous tradition in which the Prophet said the young should greet the old. But in the end of this hadith, the Prophet mentions the reason why he used to do this. He said, in order that it may remain a practice after me. It was in order to show his humility and his humbleness. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the etiquettes of greeting in the light of the prophetic hadith. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran.
You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio,
Coming up is the news.